As a station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
Oh, man.
Oh, man, I shot Marvin in the face.
Why the fuck did you do that?
Well, I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident.
Oh, man, I see some crazy ass shit in my time, but this.
Welcome, everybody. This is Room Tone. We talk movies because we love it. This is the soundtrack of Birdman by Antonio Sanchez. I'll catch up with you in a second. Enjoy. Welcome, everybody. This is Room Tone, the show that takes filmmaking community to your ears. I'm Ruggero, your host, and we're going to head dive into the mind of our guest today, who's paying us a little visit here at UBC. We're broadcasting from unceded Musqueam land on CITR Radio 101.9 FM. Our guest today is documentary director and photographer Jeff Webb. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really good, man. There is such a beautiful sun shining over our heads today here in Vancouver. A little bit of a diamond to enjoy in the winter, you know. But here we are talking about movies. So how are you related to that yourself? Who are you for the people out there who don't know you? Who are you, Jeff?
So I'm a documentary filmmaker. I also make short films, experimental pieces, a lot of videography, just anything that sort of helps the people around me with the skills that I have.
Awesome. Telling stories for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. So there's so many arts in the world. Why filmmaking?
Well, because there are so many arts in the world. Like, you can't just choose one. I love music. I love painting, drawing, writing, acting. Just interacting with each other and helping each other. I love dance. I love movement. Like set dressing. Just sound is fantastic. Just even listening to the room, this music with you in this room right now is just a wonderful experience.
What a great soundtrack, hey?
Yeah.
They really got those percussions figured out, hey? By the way, why the soundtrack of Birdman, you know? Dynamic, you know, percussions have their own world, but I'm curious, how come the soundtrack of Birdman?
Well, I guess I chose that one. It was either that or Desperado. And mm-hmm. I think those two movies are just so kinetic and energetic, and there's just so much going on that's sort of subversive about them. More so in Birdman, of course. And it's just about a flawed character just trying to make his way in the world and not even sure what's real and what's true or what's false. And he does not sure where he's coming from or where he's going. And I don't know. It's just a wonderful thing to sort of listen to. Very exciting.
Yeah, of course. Every artist's story in the end, eh? Mm-hmm. But captivating, very captivating. And of course, Antonio Sanchez, he's actually the drummer of the Pat Metheny Group. And there is a very interesting story connected to that, because this drummer, Antonio Sanchez, who composed and performed the soundtrack of Birdman, he basically was very young and he heard on the radio Alejandro Iñárritu presenting a song by Pat Metheny. So later on in his life, he basically performed with Pat Metheny in the Pat Metheny Group and composed and performed the soundtrack of Birdman itself. So that's when really life spirals up into your own dreams. That's pretty fascinating, eh? But yeah, let's go ahead, because I know that you've done music videos and you're really, really dynamic and good experienced editor. Mm-hmm. So what do you take from your daily life into these arts?
What do I take from my daily life into these arts? I think just sort of an ability to listen. I think that one of the things I sort of beat myself up about is I don't know what to say. I don't have anything that I'm striving out and I want to prove to the world, or I want to sort of put it out there. But I think what editing sort of allows you to do is just like the whole world is just sort of take what you see and what's around you and sort of find the truth. Because I find you can sort of like force something down through people's throats, but here it's just sort of like you can only deal with the facts or what's been captured or what kind of evidence you have to build your case, I guess. And it's just sort of fascinating to sort of find the truth there. Mm-hmm. I really like that.
Desperate research for the truth. Beautiful words from you, eh? Amazing, wonderful. Well, editing. Well, of course, you rewrite a story three different times. Editing becomes very, very critical. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the one big misunderstanding that people do when stepping into post-production?
Number one. I guess... Well, there is the saying, you know, fix it in post. So there is that idea that, okay, well, we'll do this. It doesn't matter what's behind him. It doesn't matter what's going on in the room or what the problems are with sound or what the problems are with stories, more usually the case. Mm-hmm. We'll just go ahead and we'll fix it in post. And what's challenging about that is, like, you might have an idea of your expectations of something, but you haven't really put the work into achieving them, and you haven't been very deliberate in constructing your notion of what you want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have a lot to learn as a director, but that's the thing that, you know, being an editor has taught me what I need to do as a mm-hmm. director, basically, is like, okay, don't shoot yourself in the foot by not planning ahead and sort of like being open to ideas in the first mm-hmm. place so you can capture those, because you never know what you'll find in the editing room. Don't have like a set idea of like, oh, I only need that, I only need that, and they can fix it and sort it out for me afterwards. I say like, cast a broad net so that you can leave yourself and me options afterwards.
Cast a broad net. Woo, Jeff, that's the one. That's I'm gonna write this down. Wow, that's great. Awesome. Well, it is awesome actually too, if I think about it, you know, the way we actually met. Mm-hmm. Because I actually met Jeff when we were volunteering at the Carnegie, at the community center in the between Hastings and Maine. And he was showing me everything. It was my first day serving. And he was showing me everything, and it was extremely organized mind, laying everything over and, you know, showing me everything. And then the way he would serve everybody and you know, show them love through the service, telling them a story through the service. You know, it's not just a soup. It's way more than that. And that's something that I found extremely, extremely, extremely profound and captivating as well. And that's how we slowly got to meet each other, and here we are. And I actually want to ask you, in the past year, mm-hmm. where have you been coming from, and what can you share about your life story for the past year?
I think that I've always about a year ago, I guess, I was working almost full time for this wedding film company, and that was great because it gave me sort of sense of routine, and it was a great team to work with. And a great sense of like, okay, I have this concrete job and here's what I'm doing and here's what I'm accomplishing every day. And I could sort of not necessarily walk away at 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. or what have you, but it was something that I could sort of distance myself from, mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to the traditional freelance world, which is your work is your life and your life is your work. Yeah. And everyone's always, you know, you're working or you're not working. It's the continual existence. So When I left that, I was looking for some routine and also looking to get back to a little bit of my purpose, which is, you know, interact with my community, interact with my world, and give back a little bit, learn a little bit, and connect with the world a little bit, because I can be a little bit in my own head. So it's fun to sort of learn about the community and look people in the eye and learn their stories and participate and learn some new skills. So
beauty. Beauty. Wow. And then you're also a painter yourself.
Yeah.
So painting basically stands at the basis of visual arts. But where do you feel painting is actually standing in 2017?
Well, I don't know. I haven't really checked in with painting in 2017. Every time I go to the gallery, it's kind of like I'm so fascinated with film and so fascinated with music and everything like that. I think one problem with painting or with drawing or with those 2D arts is that they can often be so solitary, or they can be, they're just so flat. They're so on the wall. Mm. They're so, you know, not changing. The thing that changes is you, I suppose, or the viewer, your perspective. So that's very interesting. But that's always something that frustrated me about painting, is you toiling away in your room and it's never good enough. It's never it's never finished, and you just abandon it, I guess, as Picasso said, or whatever. But I'm not sure where the state of painting is. I'm sure that people have started taking it on, and I've seen some interesting tableaus recently that challenge some old conceptions of what painting can do. So that's fascinating. But
wow. So was it a slow fade into the arts for you, or more of a quick, sharp turn, something that changed into your life that pushed you into the arts?
Well, a little bit of both, I guess, because I had always loved painting. I had always loved drawing. I had always loved the arts just all throughout my life. But I'd always had this sense of, you know, okay, this is something that I can do in my own time. It doesn't need to be my career. My career should be related to helping others and being in the world and being important and using my education and my influence and my privilege. You know, I grew up in West Van. It's a very affluent community, obviously. So every opportunity afforded me in the world, I better give back. But at the same time, your nature is your nature. And if you're a creative person, it's very difficult to let go of that and be in a chair sitting at a desk. And as organized as you have to be in filmmaking, you have to be a little bit free as well. So I did appreciate that. I went to UBC to do international relations to, yes, be the change you want to see in the world and all that. But I got really involved in the Oxfam Club. And I remember that a great way to get people around an issue, get them talking, get them excited, get them passionate and active in the world was getting them sitting, watching the same film, having having the same facts, having the same story, being able to discuss the different narratives they have about certain worlds.
Identifying a core of gravity and then communicating over it.
Exactly. So yeah, just sort of that's that center. But so, I mean, that's of course the practical use, but it also resonated with me in the fact that, like, you know, I've always wanted to do creative things. So the idea of like being able to make this change and also pay attention to the creative side in me.
Of course.
That was really liberating.
It's a balance, eh?
Yeah.
Of course, it's a balance. Wonderful. You know what? I actually want to explore that topic. We're going to have to take a little break here at Roomtone.
Okay.
So we're going to take a little break, and we're actually going to explore the percussions of Antonio Sanchez. This is the soundtrack of Birdman. Everybody, enjoy the beauty. And that was Antonio Sanchez from Birdman. The soundtrack of Birdman, what a great soundtrack right there. Percussions, what a world to explore. No limits with the world of percussions. Here we are talking about movies because we love it. Jeff Webb is paying a visit here at UBC with us in the booth. Let's explore actually what you were talking about a little earlier. And you know, it's not easy to achieve that balance, you know, creative and rational mindsets. How do you achieve that balance yourself personally?
Well, I think that music really helps, actually, to be honest. Like, even just listening to that music, I was like, I don't want to make documentaries anymore. I just want to make fiction films. I want to make films that make me feel like this. And even when I'm making films that are rated in, based in reality or based on images that I've just captured, it's always the music that sort of drives me, that propels me forward, that helps me find that emotional side with, you know, a content that may not be necessarily that inspiring or that, you know, just that uplifting necessarily. I don't know. It's just...
Of course. Well, it goes down in the end to how you feel comfortable. It's very personal. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to a balance as well, you know, everybody has its own balance. Some people prefer to live in a more creative world and some people prefer to live more in a rational world. And what do you believe are the consequences of not respecting that balance? Has that ever happened to you or?
Well, yes, definitely. I mean, usually when I'm working on a film, I'll sort of, if I get that the other person is maybe not as technically proficient as me, then it'll fall upon me, or at least that part of me will become more salient. I'll be the guy with the camera. I'll be figuring out settings and codecs and frame rates and all these kinds of things and figuring out how we're going to get the right sound and things like that. Because, I mean, that stuff really does have to happen. But what I really love and what I really look forward to in my career is working with people that I can trust to sort of take care of that stuff. Because sometimes you work with an editor, and, you know, as much as I do editing, I love being able to just pass off my work and watching it be elevated by somebody who just, you know, it's their passion. They don't want to be a director. They don't want to do anything but edit. They just want to explore and tell the truth and and find out, you know, their perfect vision of what film could be.
That's when collaboration and filmmaking meet. Well, actually, meet every time. There is no way to make a movie on your own, eh? Mm-hmm. Even if you're just you and your camera, there is someone in front of the camera telling the story with you, you know? Mm-hmm. And what has, if there have been moments like this, you know, moments of full-on collaboration, moments of team realization, what about those moments? How about, actually, I'm very curious to hear from you because you've been working in the downtown inside with the community to tell the stories of the community. Have there been any moments of yours connecting with the community that were special or stood out?
Well, I think that it was interesting. I mean, this wasn't related to film, but I did do a photography piece for Vice, and it was exploring SRO conditions in the downtown east side, single resident occupancy units, which are just deplorable conditions, especially around Main and Hastings. So it was kind of interesting to see, you know, I could go in as an artist or a documentarian and sort of go and capture. But it was so exciting to see that it was sort of involving world, and you're not just capturing people that are, you know, poor and static. They're ever changing, and they have dreams, and they have inspirations, and they have goals, and the situation is never static, and they don't give up on their situation as well. So it was very exciting to meet with people and have to explain my thesis, you know, that people are in terrible conditions their lives are messed up, but it's not their fault for certain things that can be changed. So it was fun to see people take ownership of that and go to city halls with their rat infested mattresses and try and get attention and reach out for themselves and try and make a change in the world and help each other as well. That was really exciting as well.
Yeah. And if I have to say, if Vancouver has a soul, it's living there. That's Vancouver's soul. That's the only place where there truly is a community. And out there, you know, it's not easy to find a group of people that, you know, they might not have a house, but they have a home. And that's where the community lives, in the home. And they truly embrace that. And to me, that's the beauty of Vancouver, you know. Many people might believe the opposite, but that place, the Main Hastings, and it eradicates from there. That's the pearl of Vancouver. that's the beauty of Vancouver, and we need to learn to respect it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Vancouver is stepping closer to that, hopefully, or otherwise we're going to have to move together and step closer to that sort of state of respect.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's certainly a lot of problems, and I think there's got to be a more of a recognition of some people's responsibility for changing each other's lives, mm-hmm. but there's so much solidarity to be found there. People helping each other, programs like Spikes on Bikes or Megaphone, where people are, you know, really stepping up for one another and helping each other. And even Carnegie it's just awesome because, you know, you do have to pay. So there's that element of exchange as well. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's just a great community for sure.
Yeah. Well, community is everything that we have as human beings. If we isolate ourselves, even in the past, if we isolated ourselves, we wouldn't have the chance to survive. And, you know, we need to recognize that. We need to embrace the community. We need to be able to live on our own and understand our own inner confusions and demons, whatever, however you want to call them. But the community is number one, you know, and because it's a mirror to look deep within. And without a mirror, you're just wandering lost in the jungle, you know. You need that compass right there. And emotions also are a great compass for that.
Uh-huh.
So when it comes to emotions, where is your emotional compass pointing right now in your life?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, I've been told that I have trouble in getting in touch with my emotions. But I would say, like, right now I'm kind of excited. I'm kind of sad at some times because I find it hard to tap into ideas or know exactly which way is forward for me. But I like that there are so many things right now that I can do to help myself, to help others, take care of myself, learn more about my art form. And so many people that just want the best for me in my life. So I'm very grateful for that. And just coming from that is a sense of excitement and looking forward to the future.
Awesome. Woo! That enthusiasm for the future. How can we forget that? So where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Oh, my goodness. well, I mean, I would love to be directing fiction films in a more intense way, more deliberate way. I know that I have a lot of writing to do, a lot of idea creation for myself on my own part to get there. I'm planning on working on more music videos, mm-hmm. Just sort of getting out there and interacting with people and building more of what my vision of the world looks like,
mm-hmm.
Just being inspired and challenging myself. I would love to make films like Rust and Bone, like Jacques Audiard. His works are amazing. I just get really inspired by films from all over the world. So,
mm-hmm.
And
when it comes to actual fiction movies, mm-hmm. Have there been any inspirations in your own life in the past that truly gave you that burst and that spark to be able to step into this world?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I remember, like, before I went to film school at one point, I was watching a lot of first films by people, just films where people were afraid, you know, they might be legendary now, but at that time they were making mistakes and they were just sort of falling over all over themselves. So I was watching a lot of early films. So films like, you know, Strangers in Paradise or Stranger Than Paradise or Clerks or even Bottle Rocket, like by Wes Anderson, just like all these masters, and El Mariachi by Robert Rodriguez, just these films where people just, you know, they just took a chance, you know, and like even like Greta Gerwig's recent film, like Lady Bird, is just a wonderful film. And that was her first time directing that I know of, at least anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I get really inspired by people who are just sort of like starting out and making their stamp in the world. And
wow. So the first step is the one that shows the path, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes all we need is just to take one step and then the path lights up right in front of us.
Yeah.
You know, many people actually, this is very interesting because I noticed this a lot in the filmmaking community, that many people sometimes, you know, they have their feet placed, but they can't move their weight over to the foot, you know. And sometimes everything is there and ready to go, and sometimes there are some frictions or problems. And to me, that's when my a part of me, you know, cringes and goes, oh wow, you know, like we really have to learn to appreciate our state. Also here in Vancouver, you know,
mm-hmm.
one of the most wonderful cities on earth, with this such a great flow of storytellers and you know, communicators. We really have a responsibility, you know, and we can't close an eye on that. And if if there is something that in this present moment, you know, right now in 2017 for you, Jeff, is driving you and is willing to take you further and exploring even other sides of the arts. What is that one thing? What is that other layer, that other mirror that you would like to explore in the arts right now? If there is any, if there is none, no problem, man.
Well, I think there's always just so much to be learned, so much to be experienced, so much to challenge yourself with. I think every person has their own worst fear that they might not even know about until they sort of get there. So I think my own things, what makes me most excited about filmmaking is the ability to just put yourself in a situation where you have no idea what you're doing or where this is going or what have you, but you're just excited to see where it takes you. So that'll happen in documentary, that'll happen in fiction world, but yeah, that's what excites me, I guess.
Awesome. Yeah, the idea of adventure and exploration, probably even traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Probably even traveling, you know. When documentary filmmaking meets traveling, I think that's probably one of the sweetest spots.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Is there a specific part of the world you want to visit?
Well, I'm looking forward to... My friends have talked about going to Thailand in February. And that's a part of the world I've always wanted to visit, for sure. Thailand, Vietnam.
Man.
Just so much, life and vigor there and history and also charities. I mean, I've had this impression in my life of just, it would be great to be traveling and do documentaries or promotional films for charities elsewhere in the world. I've connected with charities here, but obviously they usually don't have the funds, or you don't want to take the funds to travel on their money and go and make films for them. But if I were to travel and do films, that would be pretty exciting and inspiring. And I've had great times in Mexico in the past doing that. And looking forward to that.
Yeah, very, very, very sweet spot. Well, I wish you the best for sure.
Thank you, man.
When it comes to Vietnam, man, take the camera with you, man. Woo! It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful journey.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, I believe that emerging and immersing yourself into a culture, it's the only way to truly learn, you know? You have to put yourself into that zone of uncomfort, you know? And that's when you actually learn a little bit more about yourself, you know? You start to, you know, take a cold shower and, and you say, okay, this is how I react to the cold shower. How about I try one more time and we see how it goes? And by the way, actually physically taking cold showers in the morning actually helps you mentally and prepares you mentally to the state of lack of comfort, you know? What are the two extremes for you? What is the place of extreme comfort and the place of extreme... uncomfort for you?
Discomfort? I don't know. I'm least comfortable, and I think I've sort of touched on this multiple times, even though, you know, you're supposed to talk as if you know everything in the world. But I'm so anxious, man, like a lot of the time. So when I'll be editing and I'll be going through footage and I'll have this impression of what a client wants, or, it might be a nonprofit, it might be a profit thing. And I'll know what's possible, and I won't know if I'll be able to get there. And that'll be the case on set. That'll be on the case in the editing room. So that can be a really dark place, but it can be that much more uplifting when you sort of find a way through it. And usually my way is music or getting more footage or getting an interview or, you know, just not giving up on it and sort of being honest with your client and with yourself on what's possible, for sure.
Do you play any instrument?
No, I mean, I used to DJ a little bit.
Oh, really? A long time ago. Nice.
But like, yeah, I wouldn't, yeah.
What type of music?
Electronic music, mostly.
Mm-hmm, like tech house, techno?
I would say house.
House, all right.
It's sort of like, I think it's one of those things where it's just like, oh, there's a beat here, I can catch on to this. It's like, but then I'll be DJing and buying all these records, and I'll be like, I would never want to listen to this if I weren't DJing, you know? It's like...
Okay.
So that's the danger, I guess, is falling into a trap of making things that you would never want to experience yourself in your life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Interesting. I didn't see that coming at all. Very, very interesting. Wow. Mm-hmm. What would be that one instrument that you would like to play?
Probably the guitar.
Okay.
Because I think I need to work on my social skills. And it's a very social instrument. You know, you can travel with it. It can go on its own, or it can be part of a group. It lends itself to singing. I also love percussion and piano as well. But I think if I were to choose one and sort of like work on that, that would probably be the guitar.
The guitar, eh?
Yeah.
The guitar. And there are so many different types of guitar as well. It's such a versatile and malleable instrument.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, I didn't see that coming because, you know, like the guitar, it's an instrument that, you know, especially in the downtown east side, is so present.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everybody plays the guitar in there.
Yeah.
Two people out of three, they know how to play the guitar. And that's why also the place is so saturated, you know. There is so much art and so much feeling, you know.
Yeah.
And that way of expressing it, you know, entering the Carnegie and hearing, listening to someone playing the guitar, you know.
Yeah.
Or you're eating or whatever, you know, there is always something happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the guitar is that instrument that you can take everywhere and just tell a story with very, 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 very directly, you know.
Yeah.
The connection is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
The connection is necessary, yeah. And when it comes to connection, where do you feel most connected or most at ease in the world?
I think with physical activity.
Mm.
I really like just getting involved, getting in the zone and things. So whether that be like a really physical shoot where I'm having to like sort of jump through mud or jump around, or I've recently gotten into CrossFit, which I know is super dorky, but like, you know, it's just really, really fun to sort of get in there. Or like used to do kickboxing and jiu-jitsu.
Oh, wow,
and those kinds of things.
Amazing.
So I feel like very in my element, or running through trails, or dancing. I guess there's like, I love just dancing. But at the same time, if you're in a club, there's something political about it always. You're in somebody's space or whatever. So there's something about that. But yeah, physical activity, I would say.
Awesome. Wow, yeah. Martial arts, eh? Martial arts. I didn't see that coming. And martial arts really tap into the philosophy of life as well.
Hmm.
And when it comes to actually the philosophy of storytelling, what do you believe is the diamond of the philosophy of storytelling?
Well, I don't know. I've been kind of struggling with this, actually, because I just took started taking a master class in writing from Aaron Sorkin, who wrote A Few Good Men and Social Network and just a bunch of things out there. And he's all about objective and obstacle, and just find those two things. So the thing that your character wants, and then the thing that's getting them in their way. Every time I sort of think about that in terms of like the story I might want to tell, it just falls into cliche immediately. I have to find my own sort of philosophy that sort of helps me find natural, truthful stories without boring the shit out of everybody.
Well, if it's entertaining for you,
yeah,
it might be entertaining for someone else out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we just have to do is probably detach to the fact that it's a story coming out from us.
Yeah.
Because whatever, it's psychology, whatever comes up from us, we already find interest in it. But if we can break that barrier, then if there is a true heart beating for that story to be told, then someone else will feel that same beating. And that's how storytelling flows, and that's how life, and that's how planet turn around for the love and the passion of life and the craft and the arts. And I believe we're actually going to have to take a little break over here.
Okay.
And this is going to be the soundtrack of Birdman by Antonio Sanchez. Everybody enjoy The Gold of Percussions. Welcome back, everybody. This is Room Tone, the show that takes filmmaking's community to your ears. Ruggero in front of this microphone, and on the other side of this microphone is Jeff Webb. How is it going, Jeff?
It's going great.
Nice, awesome. So this is I'm going to throw you this opportunity right now, right over here. No time to waste. And we're actually talking about the one-minute pitch. Every time we dedicate 1 minute for a little pitch, any sort of project or anything that you would like to pitch and share with the world, then this is probably the time to do it. Are you ready? I can sure. Make it happen right now. You ready?
Okay.
And the clock is going.
Okay, so a few years ago, I had the good fortune of going down to Mexico with a good friend of mine, Emiliano, to make a short film. And in the process of that, we were aided by the Minister of History and Culture down there, and he was a former bullfighter, and he had a son who was a bullfighter, or a budding one anyways. He was 17, and he was already quite talented, and he fought young bulls. So we sort of offered to make a little film about this guy, just as a thank you to his father. And we ended up making one, and it was sort of like a promotional thing, but ended up being kind of like really profound experience for me because I was down in the pit with the bulls watching how that goes and how long it takes for the bulls to die.
15 seconds, eh?
And okay, so making a feature fictional film about his life.
Oh, wow.
Inspired by his father and his interactions with the community and how he feels about his work and what he wants to do. Yeah, and so that's it, I guess.
Awesome. Yeah, that's 1 minute right there. Mm-hmm. Awesome, man. Woo! Okay, what about that experience right there?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounded, of course, like a mixture of all sorts of layers, you know, like people traveling, of course, the arts and coming all together. What is the core of that experience? What is the one thing that you would like to relive from that experience?
I think what I would like to relive from that experience is just a fundamental shift in my understanding of the nature of this kind of violence. This kind of violence and this kind of experience, like its role in the shaping of this community. Because, you know, in this small town of La Venta outside San Miguel de Allende in Mexico, there's TV, but like there's not really a movie theater. There's very few concerts. Like there's a lot of poverty around there. Obviously a lot of like joy and life and great food and everything, but you can see the importance of an event like this for drawing the community together, binding the old with the young, and passing on tradition from one generation to the next. And I didn't see any semblance of protest. There was nobody who was contradicted about, like, feeling contradictory about this, with the exception of myself. At the same time, I was the person most passionately pursuing the blood and the guts and the gore and all the excitement of this event, to the point where I remember people sort of jumping in. There's a part where called La Corrida, where you like you run in with the bulls and you're sort of running around and you're people are taunting them and bulls have like corks on their horns so they can't hurt you. But I remember being caught up in that energy and that excitement and almost jumping in there with them just to try it, which is fundamentally against like every single ethical code I have within my body, you know. So just the fact that
it's an exploration of the opposite extreme.
Exploration of the opposite extreme, getting out of my shell, finding out more about myself and the world and my role in it and where I stand as opposed to the other parts of, you know, the other people around me.
Yeah.
And having to own up with the fact that, like, I hadn't really figured out a defense against this. But at the same time, embracing it. So one thing I really enjoyed about making that documentary is balancing the good with the bad about this experience and the people who make it their livelihood. And that's something I think that goes to the whole core of the kinds of film I want to make as well. I don't want to have them be like definitely judgmental and saying, oh, this is awful, you shouldn't do it. I want to say, like, you know, this is what happens when you do this.
So
this music is really ethereal. It's sort of tripping me out.
This is actually from Skyrim, actually.
Yeah.
From Skyrim, the video game. Yeah. Huge fan of that game, and the music makes you travel. Just open up to it, and it's going to make you travel real far.
Okay.
But talking back, actually, about your experience, because, you know, going outside from your shell, through that, I actually want to head dive into the first question of the Proust questionnaire, which is gonna be something. But I'm going to throw it at you, and the question is, what is your greatest fear?
Oh, I think my greatest fear, and I might have touched on this a lot, but just sort of getting in my own way. I think like I have a very clear sense of like, you know, if there's something to be done in the world or in a room, you know, like there's a lamp that fell over, I'm going to pick it up, you know. I think I'm one of those people. But like there's just a whole world of fallen over lamps that just need to be picked up. But just, you know, there's, you get overwhelmed or you get like, oh, that's not a problem I could solve, or I don't have the skill set for that, or I'm not the right person to solve that problem. You know, a lot of different kinds of lamps.
So that's true. That's
running
very true.
Pretty far with this metaphor. But anyways, like, yeah, I don't want to get in my own way and not make an impact on the world because I'm thinking in my own head too much.
Yeah, okay. And when it comes to lamps, what's the one lamp we need to focus the most right now in 2017?
I think just listening to one another. I think the more films that we can make... Do I need to hold this closer to my face?
Yeah. It's a little bit closer. It's not going to hurt. Yeah, okay. It's just no invisible wall here.
It's a little better?
Yeah, it's a little better. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, just listening to one another. I think there's obviously so much hate and... divisiveness in the world, and the more that we make films about trying to understand each other's point of view, the better. Certainly, I think I was touching on that a little bit with the bullfighting thing. Like, obviously, I hate bullfighting, and I don't think it's the bull's fault that these people need a sense of community from this experience. But I've grown to understand it and appreciate it, and I think that if you want to change something, you certainly have to start at a place of like, okay, where are these people coming from?
Yeah.
So definitely I want to be able to respect both sides of the story on any given issue.
Of course. Wow, okay. Woo! Let's moonwalk towards the second question of the Proust questionnaire, which is, which historical figure do you most identify with?
Historical figure?
Interesting, huh?
I don't know. I think, yeah, I remember you sent me this thing, and I was like, I know, like, it was a live one of, like, favorite or whatever historical figure.
Take your time. There is no hurry. But is there a specific
there is
part?
A hurry, though. We're on radio.
Is there a specific part in history or a specific slice of history that you feel really attracted to?
Yeah. Well, Midnight in Paris really made me think.
Oh.
Like, you know, yes, of course I want to hang out with Ernest Hemingway and everything like that.
Nice.
Although, I mean, he would have a lot of trouble these days. I think he would be like the Kevin Spacey route. Or maybe not that bad. But that era of history, I can't really think, man.
If anything pops in your mind,
I'm the only person who's ever been like me in the world.
You know, like, oh, that's everybody is like that. Trust me on that.
Yeah.
Everybody is just themselves, and that's how it is. We're all unique, of course, but that's the beauty. All unique and connected. Nice and tasty. But I'm gonna actually shift that question towards a hero of fiction.
Yeah.
That you identify with the most.
Okay. I did a project that was really exciting recently called Batman Solves Vancouver's Endemic Problems.
Oh.
And like the reason why I think I did that is that, you know, Batman has always been like a favorite character of mine. He doesn't have any superpowers. He's super, you know, he's kind of gloomy. He's kind of depressed, but he has a very clear moral compass and, you know, he doesn't want to cause violence. He doesn't want to, or at least he doesn't want to use guns anyways. But he's also a very kind of interesting character because he always has a solution. He's like a sort of Swiss Army character. So I kind of wanted to see what he does when faced with some more complex problems that are out there in the world. You know, it's not just fists flying at his face. It's poverty and it's the opioid crisis.
Awesome.
And it's gang warfare in Surrey and all these kinds of things. So, I mean, I started out the series. And it's been really helpful for me just in terms of exploring issues, finding out more about like, okay, well, if you were to solve these problems that people say are insolvable, what would you really have to do? So it's a lot about Batman actually exploring and finding out, you know, first he takes the violent tack, but that doesn't work. So he needs to try a different approach. And I like Batman for his ability to solve problems, but also I'd like to introduce myself a little bit of myself in there as
well. And that's so great because, you know, Batman basically goes back to the backslash to fear, personal fear. Awesome. I like when dots connect like that. Woohoo! All right, third question of the Proust questionnaire. Which talent would you most like to have?
Which talent would I most like to have? I think sort of synthesizing memories and experiences and facts with imagination. I really like things that are sort of rooted in reality, but they sort of just get elevated. Like I love Birdman because it's so rooted in, you know, the right now, the experience mm-hmm. of right now. Like it's all given as one shot, so you can't help but just be pulled along. But at the same time, there's so much spectacular, impossible, freak of nature things mm-hmm. that happen throughout the movie. So as rooted as you are in the here and the now and the real, you're also pulled in like the what the fuck just happened, and like can we spend time in this year? Oh no, we're going to that room. Okay, I guess so.
So
I would love to be able to say like, okay, I've had this experience, and where can I take that? Mm-hmm. I have problems with memory and all these sorts of things, so I would like to. I just need to write more, I think, to do that.
Mm, yeah. Interesting. Wow. So we're going to actually explore the fourth question of the Proust questionnaire.
Okay.
I'm going to take a little bit on a darker side. But what is your greatest regret, if you have any?
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty old right now. And I feel like I keep being seen as like somebody who's young. And I think that's just because I have sort of like a hopeful, optimistic attitude, and I'm really excited to meet people and hear their stories and like interact with them and be kind to them and everything. That said, I feel like I could have used some of that young energy earlier and more deliberately to accomplish some real concrete goals. You know, I have some things under my belt, and I've learned some skills, and I've made a lot of connections in the world. But in terms of the actual concrete impact in the world that I've had, I think it's like not negligible. But I would like to have more.
Maybe it's your perception of that. You know, many times the most influential change is the one that is invisible.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe that that you know shines light on so many people throughout our daily life that create an incredible amount of change. But it's just not a change that is not on the newspaper or on the TV, you know?
Yeah.
But it's the one change that makes a difference every single day, just like when you serve soup, you know, and you make a difference that way.
Man, like the craziest, like the little differences are what make it in that case. Like,
yeah.
Part of what you were saying, like, oh, it's the invisible changes that make the difference. And like, I'm trying to make movies, man. They're the most visible thing. Like, I need to make visible change, okay, you know? But at the same time, I really like at Carnegie, you know, like, well, yeah. So Carnegie, for anybody who doesn't know out there, is like it's a community center down in the downtown east side, and it serves low cost meals to people. So like $2.25 for lunch for like this most epic lunch. Mm-hmm. And it's even just, you know, it's such kind of a bitch sometimes when you're doing the lineup and you have to ask every person like what kind of salad do you want and like what kind of dressing. And it's like it just slows everything down. But just even that idea of like giving people choice.
Yeah.
Where they are so used to being beaten down and sort of being told awful things about themselves or internally. Beating themselves up, and then to be given sort of a choice, I think people appreciate that. So you're right, it's a lot of the little things that you can do for people.
It's really the little things that make mountains grow. Mm-hmm. And you know, when it comes to the Carnegie, you know, I truly believe that it's like a sun in this solar system, you know, and everything rotates around that. And to me, that's really such a magical place, you know. And it's impossible to tell it. Mm-hmm. You have to go and visit it yourself, you know, and you can truly feel that magic, you know, that lets you float almost. And there is so much in there, which is not only the kitchen. Shout out, by the way, to everybody in the Carnegie.
Yeah.
And, you know, not only the kitchen, but also the library, you know, the art room, the sing-along choir, you know, everybody there. Activities, just a big shout out. Cause
the Learning Center.
Yeah, the Learning Center. Everybody there. Yeah. What a wonderful place. Wonderful, wonderful place. And that's actually leading me to the fifth and final question of the Proust questionnaire. Where and when were you happiest?
I think we sort of touched on this earlier. I mean, it's just sort of like a series of experiences where I've had physical activity going on and I've just been really happy. But honestly, like even at the Carnegie Learning Center, man, like, and I've always kind of thought that, you know, hey, I would love to end up a teacher, but I don't want to give up on my own dreams right away. I want to, or at least I wish I didn't make that dichotomy, but I kind of do in my head. So, but it is really meaningful to be at the Learning Center. And now there's like this wonderful family that's come from El Salvador there, and they're just so lovely to work with, and they've got their kids, and they're at different levels, but they're just so great to work with, And just the warmth there is really, really nice. It's good to feel like you have a purpose, something to contribute, something to be appreciated for, but also something to learn. Like learning ASL there as well. So yeah, it's just a really great space to feel like you're advancing and you're advancing others. It's like you can't really ask for more than that.
Yeah, beautiful. Woo! That's some juice right there from Jeff Webb for you. Wow. So we're gonna lead to actually the all right, 100 points for that. Woo! So we actually have to wrap the episode up. I'm gonna ask you just two more things. The first one is, how can people reach you?
Okay. Well, I mean, I like email. So my name is Jeff Webb, and it's geoff.webb@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Jeff Webb Film. I'm on Facebook as a normal person, and that's actually what I contribute more to. Yeah. I also have a website. It's called cargocollective.com/Jeff Webb. It's cargocollective.com/Jeff Webb. And I have a Vimeo page too. So that has a lot of my old French hip hop stuff on there, because that's the most viewed stuff. But if you want to just click on my name, you'll see what I actually want to publish to the world.
Awesome. You know what we're going to do? We're actually going to put those links in the description underneath this podcast, so that people can just click and woo, just be Talent Transported right there.
Sick.
Final question.
Yeah.
Before we say bye-bye and we say hello to the sun out there shining in the parks in Vancouver, what is your advice to the filmmakers out there?
I think just reach out to one another. In fact, I almost kind of wished I had made as my pitch this idea that's sort of been floating around in my head, like a new directors, just a new directors club, I think would be fantastic. Just a place for sort of people to connect and share their struggles and share their ideas and collaborate. Don't be afraid to just try things, borrow some gear. Don't feel like you have to learn all the skills yourself, even though there's this proliferation of one-man bands out there. I love being able to be out there and support my friends who maybe are a little less familiar with how to work a camera, but they have great ideas about how to tell stories. We all have something to learn from one another. So
awesome. Wow, that sounds great. And this is actually time to wrap up the episode. Jeff, thank you so much for coming over here in the booth. What a great time we spent together with the soundtrack of Birdman by Antonio Sanchez. And actually, we're going to wrap up with the soundtrack of Birdman. Now, since this is movies and this is movies means people, this show is for the community and we want to connect with the people out there. So if there is someone out there listening right now who would like to connect and actually come on air as well, feel free to shoot an email at listentoroomtone@gmail.com. I'm Ruggero and we organize. We just grab a nice coffee. I love coffee, guys. And then from there, we take it on and we just come here and we share love and passion for the craft. Until then, everybody enjoy life, the soundtrack of Birdman. Ciao, ciao. Enjoy.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.